Dana Plato was one of the biggest sitcom stars of the 1980s. Her role as Kimberly on Different Strokes made her a household name. After the show was over, Dana led a wild life of sex, drugs, and robbing video stores, until her untimely death on May 8, 1999. This week on Death and Entertainment.
Live from Los Angeles.
911, what is your emergency?
Here in Hollywood now.
Two counts of murder,
injury, and death.
Oh my God!
Shocking new details
that has stunned the entertainment world.
This makes me a little nervous.
The hair stood up on my arms.
Just like in the movies.
What do you call this thing anyway?
Death in entertainment.
Well, hello, everyone.
Oh, Lord. Public Enemy number one is here today with you guys.
Is it us?
Yeah, well, we're being targeted here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, we're starting right off with that.
Yeah.
What's going on, everybody? My name's Kyle Plouffe.
My name is Mark Mulcairn.
And I'm Alejandro Dowling.
And before we get into the sad tale of Dana Plato, we are letting everyone know that we were forced. Our hands were tied. We had to go over to the paywall, the dark side.
Yeah. We're being targeted by someone. We don't know who it is. Definitely YouTube is in on it.
Yeah.
I think the woke mob is after us.
Yeah.
Or someone's after us.
If you're wondering why it's been 2 weeks since you've seen us on YouTube, it's because last week we uploaded our video that covered the documentary The Bridge.
And some of the keywords, I think, that are involved in the title and maybe some of the things that are in the description.
Yeah.
I think give credence to people being able to like report it and say like, you know, it's suicidal ideation or something like that.
Yeah, we received multiple emails from YouTube being like, people in the community are worried about you.
Yeah.
Are you okay?
No, we're not.
Yeah, but for different reasons.
But for different reasons. But yeah, we should be able to still post these things. I think they should be fine.
Yeah.
But it's bullshit.
Alejandro had a great episode that he presented, and
yeah.
Now the YouTube masses get to miss out on it.
Yeah, the bastards. I don't want to say anything too bad about YouTube.
No, it's because it featured some clips from the movie,
mm-hmm.
and that was a no-no.
Yeah.
And then even when I experimented with shorter videos, cutting out the imagery from some of the clips, they still deleted it.
Yeah.
Took it down.
Yeah.
So we're working on it, and a Patreon is coming soon.
Hey.
Won't say too much about that right now, but
yeah.
That is
it's going to get that out there at the top of the episode that,
yes.
You know, we're going to do the things that are too hot
yeah.
for TV here. We're going to be putting out a Patreon, so.
In the works.
Keep an eye out for that.
Too hot!
Too hot!
Among a lot of other things.
It yes. is a bitch.
So, yeah, we might not, we might be getting throttled on certain mainstream sites, but you can always go to the Patreon to find the too risque.
Yeah.
And it would help support the show, which we appreciate.
Not safe for work. Not safe for anyone.
Because we don't do ads here.
We don't do ads. We don't work for the man.
But you know what we do do?
What's that?
We do go back in time every once in a while.
Where are we going to, though?
We're going to May 8th. 1999.
Ooh, wah!
All right, May 8th, 1999. What in the world was going on in the world of music, Alejandro?
Let's hear it.
Well, the number three most popular song in the United States.
Yeah.
Possibly the world.
Okay.
Sixpence None the Richer, Kiss Me.
Oh, that arena banger song right there.
Every teenage rom-com just yeah. featured this song, yeah.
She's All That was the first one.
Kiss Me. Yeah, I remember the lead singer was a Swedish girl who had beautiful eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah, eyes.
Hoo-ah! She has a great eye.
Quit staring at my eyes.
Yeah. Hey. My head all the way up those eyes. Sockets.
Good singer. Nice pair of lungs. You know what I mean.
Number two.
No Scrubs.
Yeah,
crossover. TLC from yeah. a girl left eye.
Yeah.
Yeah, great song.
R.I.P.
Number one.
Number uno.
This song was ubiquitous in 1999. Livin' La Vida Loca.
Ooh. Hey, ho,
by
hey, ho, ha.
Ricky Martin.
Yeah.
Who got in trouble recently. Did we talk about that?
No, he bangs his nephew.
Yeah.
Whoa!
Wowza. Ooh.
Ooh.
Okay.
Allegedly, supposedly.
Wait, really?
That was the story.
His nephew?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But then it was recanted. For disclaimer, it was recanted by the cousin, I think, and they said he was...
Wait, the cousin said?
Or the nephew, whoever said it. Yeah,
yeah, it was the nephew.
He's like, yeah, yeah, it didn't happen like that. Like, and then we're just...
It happened like this.
We're just... Yeah. We're supposed to pretend that that never happened now? Like, he didn't say that he raped me? Like, it's crazy.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I have not been paying attention to the news.
No, you're not missing it. It's nothing good.
It's just Ricky Martin banging his nephew.
Pretty
cousins.
Bad. Yeah, that's 90% of the news right now.
A lot of drama there in that family.
Yeah. Also a lot of drama in the movies at this time.
Oh, okay. Good segue.
Number three, Saving Private Ryan. But Saving Private Ryan also featured recently deceased Tom Sizemore.
Yeah, rest in peace.
Yeah.
Biggest role.
Who also got into a sex scandal with
who was in
a
Heat.
Child.
He was in Heat also.
Ooh, it was getting hot.
Great ass.
Okay.
With Heidi Fleiss.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
He
yeah.
got in a lot of trouble with
yeah,
her.
Yeah, they got in a couple fights.
Ooh, fisticuffs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Number two at this time, The Matrix.
Ah, Neo.
Yep. Number one, The Mummy featuring Oscar winner Brendan Fraser. Let's go.
The whale star.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was when he was just a little old box office star.
Just
yeah.
a boy getting his dick grabbed by executives.
I like how Darren...
Oh, that happened then?
No.
Darren Aronofsky like
the mummy did
brings
it?
Back some of these stars and stuff. He likes doing that.
The daddy did it.
Oh, God.
It was a guy.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's why he got blacklisted. He came out and said he was sexually assaulted by like this Sony executive. And everyone freaked out. And
it was at the Golden Globes or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he got in trouble for saying something about it. And then we never heard of him. And then he turned into what he is today. Yeah. An Oscar winner, baby.
It was someone with the Golden Globes. Yeah. I think.
Yeah.
Because that's why he boycotted it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. It's coming back to me now.
Yeah, exactly.
Boy.
And it's all coming back to me now.
At least it wasn't Ricky Martin.
No, yeah. That'd be crazy.
You know? It would be.
Anyway, guys.
Kiss this.
Kiss this. Let's get into the story of Dana Plato. Okay, Dana was born Dana Michelle Strain.
Not Plato. Wow.
November 7, 1964 in Maywood, California. She was born to Linda Strain, who was a teenager herself and already had an 18-month-old child. So
what?
She had her hands full. And she was living in Maywood, California, which is not a good area, I've heard. She gave, right away, she gave Dana up for adoption. June 1965, the 7-month-old Dana was adopted by Dean Plato and his wife, Florine K. Plato. Dean, the dad, owned a trucking company. Dana was raised in the San Fernando Valley, so right around here.
Hey,
yeah.
SFE.
SFE. Yeah. Valley girl.
Just like us.
When she was three, her adopted parents divorced. So she's like running into bad things left and right. She's born to a mom who doesn't want her because she already has a kid, and she's a single mom anyway. She's adopted by this family, and by the time she's three, they get divorced.
Wow.
She goes to live with her mom. So that's Florine K. Plato. Her mother was like a crazy helicopter mother, like wouldn't let her go out, do anything. Like living in the valley, especially in the 70s, must have been fucking chaos.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure a lot of like her girls, like her age or younger girls, you know, were going down to the clubs to hang out, you know, to go to like, you know, hair band concerts or something at the Troubadour.
Right.
But not Dana. Her mom wouldn't let her do anything. She made her be straight as an arrow.
That was a helicopter.
Nice sound effect. It's a guy from Michael Winslow from fucking Police Academy's here.
Is that the same helicopter from the Twilight
Zone?
Yeah,
like a John Landis helicopter? Yeah. What are we talking here?
Her mother was, it was weird because her mom was like a helicopter parent, but she also brought her to TV commercial auditions all the time.
Yes.
Yeah, let's keep her safe, but then let's bring her near pedophile, you know, casting directors every day.
Well, when you're short on cash.
I think that's what was going on here. I think that's what every parent that was divorced in the Valley. I had their kid kind of get into acting.
Oh, for sure.
And you know who had a very similar scenario was Gary Coleman.
Yeah.
He was adopted, and then his adoptive parents forced him into the...
Well, we're going to talk about it later, but okay. He actually did that Stern interview, actually, you sent me, in which Gary Coleman went on there. The one thing he will say about his family is that they did not push him into acting.
That's true.
But then they stole all his money.
But that still doesn't make that much sense. Exactly. They didn't push him, but come on.
He wasn't tall enough to push. They threw him.
They punted him into it.
They rolled him in.
On a skateboard.
Yeah. Okay, well, you know, I just think when you're that young, sure, the kid's like, hey, I want to be in movies. It's
but
like,
you can
shut
like,
up. Here's
you could be
your
like,
crayons.
You could be like the puppet master and like through subtle ways that aren't that direct, you can kind of coax them into it. But
like, hey, you want to do this audition, right?
Yeah.
You want to do it?
No Disneyland.
I guess Gary Coleman got into modeling first. Which is,
I know.
I swear
crazy.
To God.
I know.
That's what he says. He got into, for Montgomery Ward, he was like modeling, like, you know, lawn furniture. I don't know. I don't know what he was doing.
What you talking about, sofa?
Woo! All right, Alejandro's back.
Mm-hmm. I never left. Hello.
Besides acting, Dana got heavily into figure skating. She actually was going to turn pro, but she decided that she instead wanted to pursue acting more. But I think it was her mom saying, like, there's no money in figure skating.
Yeah.
But she was going to go to the Olympics and stuff.
Yeah, she was very good.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But yeah, then she started doing like hundreds of commercials.
She could have been kneecapped by Tonya Harding.
Yeah.
Wow.
She looks if like only. She looks like she'd be involved in that. Yeah. Story somewhere. Just her overall look.
Yeah.
yeah, they both have that kind of country corn.
Yeah, like trailer park. Yeah,
Pollyanna, innocent yet.
They work at a country buffet.
They'll stab you, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll hurt you. When she was 10 years old, she got her first role on the $6 Million Man. Ooh. As like a regular TV series role, I mean, not commercial-wise. She only made a brief appearance, but that got her the attention of Hollywood. Next, she gets a part in a TV movie called Beyond the Bermuda Triangle, which is like a trashy, you know, everything that it sounds like.
You don't say.
Yeah.
That sounds like a real deep
Here's the log line. A retired businessman notices that there has been a rash of ships and planes disappearing off the coast of Florida, and he starts to investigate.
Where's all the boats?
I can't find these freaking boats here.
I've been looking all day in the Bermuda Triangle. You got to go beyond it.
Marone, where are these boats? I don't know why he's an Italian guy for some reason, but a lot of diaspora from New York go down to Florida.
Ask all the hard-hitting questions. Where's the boat?
Dude, where's my boat?
Yeah. What does mine say? Ship!
The Bermuda Triangle of Sadness.
Yeah, exactly. Some would say her biggest earlier role came in the small role that she got in Exorcist 2.
Really?
Which is uncredited. She plays an autistic girl. She has a very small part, but it shined through enough to get her some attention.
Wow.
I have a clip of that here. And some would say this could be ableist and maybe a cancelable offense if you were to do that this today.
What's the matter with you?
Your mother sucks cocks.
Okay.
That is not autism.
That reminded me of like Simple Jack.
Simple Jack.
Simple Jack, yeah.
Never go fool our word.
Yeah. I want to be your friend. In 1978, she does a movie called California Suite, which... based on a Neil Simon play, like got great reviews.
That was a big movie.
Big movie at the time. She got a smaller role, but...
cast, right? A who's who?
Yeah.
I want to say.
Yeah, there's a ton of famous people in that.
Because Neil Simon back in the day, it was the hottest production you could be in.
Yeah.
Like The Goodbye Girl got Richard Dreyfuss an Oscar.
Yeah. Biloxi Blues eventually with Matthew Broderick.
Yep.
A little crossover.
We know a little bit of the behind the scenes on that one.
Yeah. She wanted to keep pursuing movies, but her family's like, there's no money in that. Like right what? Now, TV money is primo right now.
Wow.
Like movies, you know, you can do all right, but you're Dana Plato. You know, you're not going to be a full-fledged movie star at 12 or 13 years old and start making big bucks.
And it's not consistent work.
It's not, yeah. If you get like a, you know, a Scorsese movie or something, you get like a bit part or, you know, or some movie, you're not going to be a huge star. You're not going to make the big money like a Charlton Heston or Robert Redford's going to be making around this time in the late 70s.
Yeah. Even Linda Blair had trouble after starring in the Exorcist movies.
Yeah, she didn't make it. They didn't make a ton of money.
No.
And like,
she went to Playboy.
Yeah, well, so did Dana. But we'll talk about that eventually.
Don't they all?
So keep in mind, she's like 12 years old now. And like her parents are, her mom's really making all the decision. It's like kind of Brittany Murphy's mom situation. Mm-hmm. If you see some of the shots taken of her around this time, like I was talking before we started recording, I was saying it to Alejandro that she did a lot of like face shots for acting and stuff. And a lot of them were her like in her preteens looking very racy, looking very.
Like JonBenet Ramsey is a 6-year-old.
Kind of like
made
that.
Made to look
like CP.
Yeah. An older woman.
Borderline.
Yeah. And that's how it was in the 70s, though, with those pinup child stars.
Yeah.
It was gross. Like Leif Garrett. Not that I've seen the pictures, but.
Yeah. He's got him taped on the inside of his car.
No, I was watching some other show.
Yeah, taped for some reason.
They showed him, and they were talking about how gross one of his photos was, his headshot.
Yeah.
Because it was just, like, inappropriate. Yeah. A lot of these kids were posing and wearing clothes that 20-somethings would be wearing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's disturbing.
I just find it funny. Her mom was like, I need to protect you. And then this is the industry she brought.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
So Dana does a bunch of failed pilots, small roles. She was on this show called Family. She was on Chips for a little bit. While she's on the Gong Show, actually, she's discovered by a producer who is putting together the show Different Strokes. About a rich family with two adopted African-American kids.
Different Strokes.
Yeah.
Kyle?
For different folks.
Oh, I thought maybe you knew the theme song.
No.
Mark?
I don't. Different Strokes. It's one of the famous ones. You and me. Different Strokes.
Possibly written by Alan Thicke.
I've never seen it.
Really? I didn't know the theme song was written by Alan. I didn't know he did theme songs.
Can you Google that real quick?
Yeah.
He did do theme songs, actually. He did Wheel of Fortune as
what?
Well. Alan Thicke.
That
makes
sense.
Yeah, he made a lot of money doing that.
Alan Thicke did write the theme song. He wrote and performed the theme song for Different Strokes.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chuck Lorre also wrote the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 90s cartoon theme song.
So Different Strokes. The show was about the misadventures of a wealthy Manhattan family who adopted the children of their late African-American housekeeper from Harlem. Okay. Yeah, they wouldn't do that today.
Little dicey.
No. Little dicey. She's 13 when she gets the show. Imagine that. Like, she's like a huge Hollywood star at the age of 13.
Because it's huge off the...
Right out of the bat. Yeah, it's pretty big. She starts dabbling in coke and alcohol around this time.
Woo!
13. I guess her mom didn't really shelter her from anything, yeah. Really. She did Different Strokes for 6 seasons. And... Along with Todd Bridges and Gary Coleman, they all became huge like household names. Dana starts making $100,000 per episode.
Ooh.
So say there's like 22 episodes in a season. That's some pretty good money.
It's a lot of dough back in the day.
2.2 mil.
Yeah.
It's a lot of dough now.
Mm-hmm. Of course. I'll take it. The show is such a hit, it spawns a spinoff in the first season, which is unheard of. I don't know if you remember the show, Alejandro. I know Kyle doesn't. But Mrs. Garrett was the housekeeper at first.
Facts of life.
Well, in the first season, she follows, Dana Plato's character, Kimberly, to her all-girls school, like, you know, preppy school in order to like help her sew a dress or something.
So this is kind of like the Another World spinoff kind of the Cosby Show.
But they weren't planning on doing a spinoff at first. It was just part of the first season arc.
I see.
And then Mrs. Garrett goes to the school where Facts of Life takes place, and she's like a huge hit. She like helps everyone with their lives and stuff. And then the woman who played her, this woman Charlotte Ray,
yeah,
she pitched to NBC's like, "Can I just do my own spinoff show?" My theory is that she saw like kind of something bad happening with those child stars on Different Strokes, and she's like, "I want out of here."
And that's what became the Facts of Life.
That's what became the Facts of Life. So that was the spinoff.
That was very smart of
and
her.
And Dana Plato would come back and forth and do both roles once in a while and just come back to the Facts of Life. When Dana's 19, she moves in with a low-life Lanny Lambert, like some scoundrel.
Low-life Lanny Lambert.
Yeah, I'm calling him low-life.
Yeah. I'm Lanny Lambert.
That wasn't
what do you need?
That wasn't a street name or anything, but I called him Lanny Lambert.
Low-life Lanny.
Yeah. But Lanny, he was like some kind of like bad musician that didn't really do well or do too much.
In L.A.? No kidding.
Yeah, exactly. Some scumbag that, you know, doesn't wake up in the morning and is bad at rock and roll. Yeah.
Low life L.A., Lanny Lambert?
That's a tongue twister. That's on the business card.
Yeah.
She meets this guy and she thinks it's like the love of her life. She gets pregnant by this guy.
Oh.
And there's some debate here whether or not she purposely got pregnant in order to get kicked off the show. Either way, they're not going to write around her character to be pregnant. So they're just like, you're out. After six seasons, you're out.
So it was not her decision.
Not her decision, but she told the guy who played Mr. Drummond that she kind of wanted this. That's what his story is, that she secretly wanted to leave the show and do movies. But there's some back and forth of like, you know, who chose who to leave and whether or not they just fired her because she was pregnant,
Which would be horrible.
There was word that the producers were worried that Plato's personal life ruined the wholesomeness of the character and the squeaky clean image of the show. She moves on and she has the baby of Lanny Lambert, loser Lanny Lambert.
There's the other L we were looking
for. Yeah.
Low life loser LA Lanny Lambert.
And Liren.
Yeah.
But some other people said she was fired because of her insane drug abuse, which is really ramping up before she meets loser Lanny Lambert.
Who probably doesn't help her get clean.
Either way, the character Kimberly was written off the show, and they said that she moved to Paris to study for a couple of years. She returns to guest star once in a while.
So on Different Strokes.
On Different Strokes, yeah.
Because that went on for like 10 years, didn't it?
It went on for eight seasons. She wasn't in the last two. She was fired after season six.
And Gary Coleman said that he didn't want to do the last season.
Really? I didn't know about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that he basically was such a pain in the ass that they said, all right, we're just going to cancel the show.
Yeah.
Damn.
So Dana tries to start a serious movie career after she has a baby. But it's too late. You know, she's 19. Unfortunately, at that time, you're just pigeonholed. If you're known as a huge, mainstream TV comedy star, you're just going to stay that, you know?
Yeah.
For some reason, obviously, there are exceptions. Like George Clooney, it took him a while, but he went from doing, you know, Facts of Life to doing ER to becoming a movie star.
But he was not the star of Facts of Life.
No, that's true, too. Yeah, he wasn't the main face of it.
But then, I guess there's a double standard. I don't know, but Michael J. Fox.
I think both of those guys, not, you know, no misogyny involved, are better actors than Dana Plato.
Right.
I'll show you a little bit later some of her acting chops.
Oh boy.
It's not great. But
well,
I think
The Exorcist too.
Today, Junior.
Yuck. What the hell was that?
Yeah. So Different Strokes is finally canceled March 7th, 1986.
Wow, that's late.
Yeah. Before long, Dana is settling for B-movies and adult films as a way to make money. In the meantime, she was also spiraling further into drug addiction and alcoholism. this is taking over her life. Like, she's getting really messed up. Her personal problems worsened in the late 80s, especially when her husband ended their relationship in their marriage.
Lenny?
So Lanny Lambert, you know.
Or Lanny.
Yeah. Lanny. Lanny Lambert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're awarding custody to low life loser Los Angeles Lanny Lambert.
How annoying is that?
It's one of those guys that does the auctions. They're like, hey, we got
we got one kid, two kids. Sold to the loser in the corner.
Lanny Lambert's like, yes.
Yeah, how big of a mess do you have to be that where Lanny is the winner in that?
Yeah, he's the responsible party involved. And Lanny gets full legal custody.
Wow.
Of their son, Tyler. So not like you really got to fuck up to be a mom. The judge always wants to give more custody to the mom, which is probably usually right in most circumstances.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My mom tried to say that's not true recently. I was like, what world do you live in?
She said that.
Yeah.
The South Shore.
Yeah.
That's like, pretty famously known.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Mom.
Sorry, Kyle's mom.
In desperation, she's in a really bad place. She signs over power of attorney to an accountant who disappears with the majority of her money, leaving her with less than $150,000. She had made millions over her career. She's left with, like, nothing. But this accountant didn't just take her money. He took, like, eight other clients' money and ran away with $11 million and was never seen again.
Wow. Never seen.
Never seen again.
Fucking D.B. Cooper. I love it.
Yeah.
Let's go.
He just cashed out all the money of all his clients and just said, see you later.
See you.
And to be able to actually disappear.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Yeah. I guess, you know, we'll find him one day and then, you know, when he's dead. But, you know, until then, congratulations.
Yeah.
You scoundrel.
Yeah.
Maybe Lanny Lambert was involved in this.
Yeah.
Isn't that pretty sick, though,
Lanny Lambert on the lam.
Yeah.
Like, he probably has a mansion somewhere in the Philippines.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's,
yeah.
Yeah. He's probably in
some third world country.
Yeah,
country.
Exactly. He goes to the local bar where they do gross things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they do like squirrel fights or something.
Right.
And he bets on them. And he's, yeah, like, he's like the local fat cat. Like, everyone's like, yeah, this guy's like the boss of the town.
Yeah.
Or
yeah,
pin the tail on the child sex worker.
Oh my god. Okay. See, I knew we had to get out of that before you just said that, but now I fucked up.
Oh boy.
Dana hoped that a Playboy photo shoot in 1989 would lead to better offers in the entertainment industry and an overall improvement of her current life. But shockingly, that didn't pan out. But she did do the Playboy photo shoot. She feels totally defeated. Her life pretty much feels like it's over. She's addicted to drugs and alcohol. Her life seems like it's over. Where does she move to, guys? To get better.
Montana.
No. Kyle?
Somewhere with a lot of crime, I would imagine.
She goes to Las Vegas, baby.
Hey!
Perfect town for her at this time.
Yeah.
That should set her straight.
This is where she tries to reinvigorate her career. That makes sense.
Oh, boy.
She wound up working at a dry cleaner's.
And it started.
Yeah.
That's like when Jack Nance became a doorman.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, what the hell?
She's like, she's, you know, people were recognizing her. Like, aren't you the girl from Different Strokes?
And wow. Gary Coleman did that.
Yeah. He was working as a security guard. Yeah.
Wow.
Sad. The 90s were not so good for Dana. If the 80s were bad, the 90s were worse. She had a few run-ins with the law in her, you know, quest for more drugs and alcohol. In 1991, she robbed a convenience/video store with a pellet gun. she was like half hiding her face. And then a clerk reportedly called 911 and told the operator, I've just been robbed by the girl who played Kimberly on Different Strokes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. She turns herself in.
Wow.
She's like, they got me here.
And was she taking videos or just the money?
She was looking for cash. I guess she thought it was like a big lucrative business. I don't know.
She's like, and give me one of them Terminator 2 VHS copies.
I think she just needed some money to score some drugs. She gets 5 years probation, and as long as she stays out of trouble, she can stay out of jail. But does she do that, guys?
Yes, of course.
Nope. The next year, she's arrested for forging a prescription of 1,000 Valium. Not even 1,000. Like 1,000.
Yeah.
Why not?
Get away with 100.
Yeah. Yeah.
500. That's understandable.
Yeah.
1,000.
1,000. I say. Yeah. That guy's back.
Yeah. We got 500 here. We got 1,000.
She's sent to jail. Guess who comes to bail her out? No one else but Wayne Newton.
Wayne Newton.
Forks over $13,000 to bail out Dana Plato in Vegas.
Wow.
Why?
I mean, I think there was something going on there sexually. That's maybe my theory.
Really?
Yeah. That's the only thing I could come up with. Everything else is speculation. And that's also speculation.
I never really thought much about Wayne Newton's sex life.
Yeah, me neither. Except for the fact that he tried to bang Clark Griswold's wife
Vegas Vacation.
Vegas Vacation, yeah. But she's still, Dana's still out there trying to get stuff. She's still got to manage, she's still got representation.
Yeah.
She's still got a leg above most people in this town.
Literally.
Yeah. Hey-o.
In those yeah. B movies.
Her comeback is about to happen.
Okay.
She right now in 1992, she gets the biggest life-changing, industry-changing, unprecedented role ever.
Basic Instinct.
She's the first actress in a video game.
Whoa.
In 1992, she gets the video game Night Trap that came out for Sega.
Wow. Was that for regular Sega?
No. It was a like interactive role playing game that came out on like a DVD type.
Sega CD.
Yes,
Sega CD. Yeah.
Oh my God, I remember that.
Yeah,
that was like controversial, wasn't it?
Very. Yeah, actually, Joe Lieberman actually put together a congressional investigation to look into this specific game.
Wow,
I remember that when it was new because it made headlines.
Night Trap tasked the player to observe teenage girls having a sleepover, visiting a house which, unbeknownst to them, is infested with vampires. So it's a good thing. You're supposed to save the girls. I think they canceled this. Well, as a result of Joe Lieberman and his stupid congressional investigation, that idiot Joe Lieberman, that fuck.
Running mate to Al Gore in 2000.
Yeah, and he ruined that campaign. He sucks. They sold 50,000 copies the following week after they opened those investigations.
There you go.
So good on them.
Right, did they make their money back?
I don't know, but they canceled the game in like January 90, like 2 years later, they pulled the game.
Or it could have been like one of those producers type things, like Springtime for Hitler, where they wanted it to fail.
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah. It was just a tax write-off or something. Dana follows this up with Bikini Beach Race, which I'm sure is just as, you know, intellectually brilliant as it sounds.
Sounds wholesome.
Yeah. She just does a slew of bordering on B movies like that, bordering on porn B movies rather. So
not even like cheap straight to video B movies, like further down the line, you think?
Yeah, like straight to bootleg in a found in a parking lot movies.
Like not the kind that are going to be played on Skinamax.
No, not that kind. No.
Wow, so it was really low.
Really low.
Wow.
Yeah.
What the hell were you doing so close to the station?
I just got bail posted.
She was walking the streets.
I was working.
Working the streets.
Will you please tell him who I am before I rip him a new asshole?
I bet some Johns pay good money for that service.
Quinn, shut up. Look, she's not a hooker. She's a private investigator, and she works for me.
Schmuck.
Sorry. It's all right. Honest mistake.
What?
Honest mistake.
Honest mistake.
So, yeah, and then 1998, she returned to Different Strokes, guys. She returns to Different Strokes.
Whoa.
Kind of.
Okay.
She does a three-way porn movie officially titled Different Strokes, The Story of Jack and Jill and Jill.
Whoa. Jack and Jill and Joe.
It's an erotic drama film about a love triangle.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, because what would improve Jack and Jill having sex? Throw in another Jill.
Yeah, why not? This would be her second to last film before her death.
Mm.
Nathan Rabin of the AV Club gave the film a harsh review, stating, "The shamelessly titled Different Strokes lacks anything resembling even community theater level acting. It's notably mainly known for its aggressive lack of shame, from the title to its threadbare plot to its community access level. No, community access level production values. The film reeks of crass exploitation. Why is this guy giving like an earnest review of this anyway?
Can he review Deep Throat next?
Yeah.
I really care what he has to say about it.
I don't know
it.
What's stupider, the movie or the fact that he reviewed it in earnest. Like, okay, dude, it's like a person strung out on drugs is trying to make some money in a B movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Relax.
She's not exactly Judy Davis over here.
Yeah, not at all.
Jack and Jill went up the hill to fuck each other's brains out.
Hey!
After getting arrested again, she was ordered to attend rehab, but it didn't seem to make a difference. Though she soon insisted that she was clean and sober, her loved ones doubted that claim and remained concerned about her health. So, like, she was just a liar, you know, just told everyone, I'm clean, I'm sober, everything's fine, I'm still acting. Kind of in the same way, this is a good companion piece to Corey Haim, who would never admit to how messed up he was. And he always said, I'm going to get a new role that's going to catapult me into the stratosphere. And they just were never sober ever again, it seems like.
Yeah.
They were never, like, honestly looking at their life and what's going on.
Right.
She becomes engaged to some guy, Robert Menchaca. They started living in an RV in Oklahoma. So, on his parents' property. They were dating for only 6 months before they get engaged. Kind of a weird circumstance.
So not exactly a step up from Lanny.
Yeah.
I think it's a lateral move, maybe. But Lanny took care of the kid, kind of.
And Taylor. Did she have a relationship with Tyler?
She always claims that, you know, he lived with her and they were very friendly, but that's not true at all. Like she said in this Howard Stern thing that I've been about to go into, that the kid lived with her, but that wasn't true at all. She had no custody. Jeez. The kid really didn't have much to do with her.
And in the Howard Stern interview that we're about to go into, she basically lies most of the time.
Besides the fact that she's doing bad B movies. She does admit to that. But she said she's working. Everything is great. Her son lives with her. She's off drugs. She's been clean for 10 years.
Did she say 10 years?
Yeah. Well, to get into it a little bit, this is a very important part of what happened to Dana Plato. Not to say Howard Stern is at fault, but it's very important to bring this up because this was very close to the time she died, that she did this final interview on Howard Stern. The way it started was a caller called into Howard Stern in February of 1999 and said that he saw Dana with two women in New York and she looked ragged and strung out. The guy said she looked like she had a needle hanging out of her arm. She was that bad.
Jeez.
Then Dana's girlfriend Jennifer calls in saying that Dana's son Taylor called her looking for his mom in New York. So
she was in a lesbian relationship.
She was.
With this woman.
Which she denied also.
Yeah.
She said she had never, you know, crossed over that and had any sexual relationships with women ever. But that's not true either.
Right.
But this woman who was like a PA on some of her B movies called into Stern and said, what that guy said was true, and I'm looking for Dana Plato if anyone knows where she is.
Right. And that's an interesting, the way they called in that day in the clip. It's like really weird because the guy says that she was out of it when he encountered her.
Yeah.
And that it seemed like she was on drugs. Yeah. And then suddenly the girl calls in later in the episode, the girlfriend, saying like, I'm looking for Dana. And it's this weird mystery that's unfolding.
Yeah. So Dana catches wind of all this stuff and she's like pissed. And she wants to come in and clear the air. She wants to come in the studio and do her own interview.
Oh, wow.
So she must have drove the RV up there with Robert Marcaca, whatever his name is. So she comes in on May 7th, 1999. So that's what, 3 months later, she comes in and actually does an interview.
Wow.
She comes into the studio, does a formal interview. Like I said, she's lying about everything. She's an emotional mess. She's on something.
That's what they were saying in the studio.
Yeah.
Telling her that.
Howard asked her, well, she, like, Howard, you know how he has like all his callers come in, call it, and they're assholes.
Yeah.
They're like, hey, you piece of shit, you loser, you know, you're has been.
Howard's not going to say it. But he's going to open the phone line.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, he'll allow it.
There's no screening there at all. No. Baba Booey just lets in whoever they want to call in.
His producer for those that don't know.
Oh, yeah, Gary Delabate, the producer. So, yeah, everyone's like, hey, screw you. You're washed up. You're a hag. You know, I hate you. And then she's just like taking this. And then some guy's like, you're on drugs right now. And then Jackie Martlin actually says, yeah, she's on drugs. She's stoned right now.
Wow.
Like her eyes were bugging out or something.
Everyone else just said she seems wired. But Jackie's like, he could tell a spade could tell a spade.
Yeah.
They could smell their own.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and she does seem like agitated and totally out of it. One of the callers is like, why don't you take a drug test? And then she's like, I'll do it, of course. Howard's like, give me your urine. He's like, you can piss on me if you want to. I just want to see you piss in the cup. Oh, I do you right now. Benji runs and go gets an actual drug test that actually uses hair to test drugs. They're like, give me your hair. Baba Booey takes a piece of her hair. She hates that. First, she's like, I don't care. You could test whatever. And then after they stop recording, she wants the hair back right away.
Oh,
she's like, give me the hair back. Gary wouldn't give it to her.
Wow.
And she's so distraught when they're going over the whole drug test because she's like, you know what? I don't need to prove anything to anyone. I don't need to take a drug test. And Howard's like, well, okay. She's like, but I will for you, Howard. And he was like, oh, okay.
Oh, great. Show us your tits.
Yeah.
That was like Johnny Carson.
Oh, great. Yeah,
we got some weird, wild.
Yeah, Howard
tits
was gross
here.
Too. Howard's like, you got great breasts. And she's like, thank you, Howard. He's like, you know, I'm just saying, you know, I see something, I say they're good.
He kept saying that she looked good.
She was weirdly there also promoting, like, she was going to appear at a Motorhead concert in Chicago or something.
Yeah, it was something. It was like a metal expo.
Yeah. And I'm like, what is she doing there? Like, what is her show? What's her act?
And they never got to the bottom of it, what she was going to be doing there.
Yeah.
It's like, you're just going to be introducing them?
I think there was so much chaos going on there. No one knew where to land on that. 2 days later, she's found dead in that RV in Oklahoma.
Jesus.
Of a drug overdose. Yeah. So right after that interview, you know, everything, you know, they left it seemingly okay. Like everyone was like, okay, you know, it was a couple of weird moments there, but she didn't get the hair back, but it was okay. Gary Baba Booey said she had called afterwards and said she had the best time ever. Everything was great. And then next thing you know, 2 days later, she's dead in the RV of an overdose.
Yeah.
Police initially said she died of an accidental overdose of a painkiller in Valium. But a doctor, Dr. Balding, which is a weird name, the deputy state medical examiner said that she had fatal concentrations of the muscle relaxant Soma in a generic form of the painkiller hydrocodone in her body. Mm-hmm. So it was like a mixture of like a ton of drugs she was doing at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dr. Balding.
Yeah.
Paging Dr. Balding. And you know one guy's like new there and he's just losing his hair. He's like, fuck you guys.
Did Jimmy put you up to this? Should we hear a little bit of the
interview? Yeah, let's hear a little bit of the Stern. There's a good clip at 42:35. In which Stern, after the fact, talks about what happened. This is from May 10th.
Yeah, everybody, good morning. What's happening? It is Monday. Welcome. Well, I see that Dana Plato died. She was on our show Friday.
Wow.
So over the weekend.
That we were the last ones to do an interview. In fact, the New York Post wrote up the whole interview.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
New York Post.
See how bad I am at telling the people
they're still at it.
Yeah, they were after him hardcore.
I was like,
totally duped.
Jackie said her eyes were like,
what a
scumbag. Oh my
God. He burps in the middle.
She seems pretty straight to me.
It's a beautiful eulogy.
How weird was that?
just never know.
You know, that happens to us a lot. We interview people and they die.
I know.
Yeah, maybe it's something with you.
Maybe it's you, buddy. Well, he had Scott Weiland on the show recently. And then he's like, I'm clean and sober. Everything's great. 2 days later, he gets arrested with a bunch of, 3 pounds of heroin in his pocket or something.
Jesus.
So, yeah, I think he was, like usual, Howard, he's just kind of talking about himself.
Yeah, exactly. You
know? How does this affect me?
Yeah.
Mega concert, including Motorhead and Fang. And if you need more info, call the Expo hotline at 314-409-3600. What are you going to do at this concert?
I'm not quite sure, but doesn't it just go with all the controversy?
Right. You know? So you're going to just show up and introduce some of the bands? Is that it?
Sure.
You don't even know what you're going to be doing there.
Not quite, but I'm there.
Right, you're just going to go there paying you, and why not?
I really love this man, Shane. He's wonderful. He's been very good to me.
He's the promoter?
Yes, he is.
I see.
Yes.
He asked you to appear
yes.
there.
All so right. And I guess I'll be signing autographs
I think
you're on the air.
On speed or something.
This is not Todd Bridges.
Let's hear this.
Todd?
Yeah.
Are you Todd Bridges?
No.
Okay. Go ahead. Ask your question of Dana.
Hi, Todd.
Get this girl out of here. She's a has-been.
Oh, please.
Come on. She just needs to admit that she's an ex-druggie, ex-con, lesbian with mental health problems.
So that shows you what
that's
saying.
The caliber of people they're letting through there.
That gives you an idea.
She's trying to resurrect her career.
Well, what's wrong with that?
Trying to make some money again.
No, excuse me.
There's nothing wrong with that if you're honest.
I'm honest. I am a drug addict, alcoholic. I am a recovering, always am recovering. Okay,
right.
I am
and then later on, a woman calls in.
Yeah.
And she says, Dana sounds fine to me.
Oh, God.
Beautiful voice. And then Dana, just the littlest compliment, she starts crying.
Yeah.
Fuck.
And then that woman starts talking about something else. She starts going crazy on someone else, like her the job she works at. Yeah. I want to talk about my job because there are a bunch of assholes down here. And they're like, all right, get the hell out of here.
Get out of here.
But, hey, Dana will take what she can get at that point.
Wow.
Very sad. She passes away. In 2000, Fox broadcast a television movie based on Dana Plato titled After Different Strokes, When the Laughter Stopped. Mm. The film was focused on her life and work after the show, including her death. It featured actors who at time were unknown, as well as Bridges, who made a cameo. So Todd Bridges played himself in it.
Wow.
Yeah.
And in that movie, they portray Howard Stern as evil.
Yeah, though they're talking about that, I think, in a later Stern.
Later they, in that
they
same
make him
video.
Look like Sideshow Bob or something, or like, you know.
Yeah, that the studio is some kind of, you know, like interrogation room.
Yeah.
And then Howard is just like, hey, Dana, show us your breasts. And then they make Baba Booey look really bad.
Yeah.
Because he's the one that took the hair sample, and wouldn't give it back.
Wow. Yeah.
And then in that same clip where they were reacting to her death in real life, they start joking about how they still have her hair sample.
Poof.
And Howard's like, I don't know what, we don't need to test it.
Maybe
now.
There was
we
more
have
to
the
it.
Answer.
Yeah.
Because I could tell Robin was like bringing it up, and like Howard didn't want to talk about it that much.
Well, because they don't look good in
about the hair thing. About the hair, yeah.
It doesn't make them look good.
Right.
Yeah.
Because if somebody dies 2 days or less after this interview where it was humiliating.
Yeah, it was literally the next day.
Yeah, I mean, that at the very least had to have contributed to her mindset.
Oh, she must have been, ruined mentally.
And it started with some random guy just calling in. And saying he saw Dana Plato.
Yeah,
months before that.
That exposed her personal life or just, you know, her to all this nonsense.
Wow. That caller is the first domino to fall in death.
But she had also been on Stern a bunch before. So she was like a known entity in like the Sterniverse.
Oh, okay.
Of all like the crazy people that kind of get involved with him. Once you're in there, you're in there.
Yeah, you know what to expect.
Yeah.
And then that girlfriend that called in looking for her, Dana just dismissed her in that last interview.
Yeah, wow. she's like, I don't even know that girl, really.
And I wish her well. She needs to get help. I'm not a lesbian, and we were never in any relationship. But then she starts saying they lived together, and Howard's like, I thought you weren't with her. And then she's like, well, it was my roommate. Yeah. What? So you don't know what to believe.
Yeah.
The son, Taylor, was really looking for his mom, which is the saddest part of it.
Oh, that sucks.
Because...
Tyler or Taylor?
Tyler.
Tyler. Because on May 6th, 2010, he dies by suicide of a self-inflicted gunshot wound at the age of 25.
No.
Yeah.
Jesus.
And it was directly related to his mom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That's tragic.
Oof.
Yeah. On November 7th, 2019, on what would have been her 55th birthday, Todd Bridges commented on Twitter about their friendship, leaving a tribute to Plato. You were the one person I could always talk to. You were one of my best friends. I will never forget you and love you forever. Happy birthday, Dana. R.I.P. your best friend. I think they shared a kinship of just being, you know, these troubled people that got this like big TV show and.
Yeah.
You know, shit just went wrong in their lives, you know, and I think they just weren't prepared and, you know, they were used and abused by, you know, a lot of these producers. But these producers also, you know, what the studio wasn't doing it. What do you want these like individual showrunners to do?
Yeah. And their parents.
Yeah, the parents too. Yeah. And she only had the one mom and she was from a broken family. On top of being given up by a broken family. So it was like very...
Yeah.
She was kind of doomed for failure.
Jeez.
And same thing with Gary Coleman. His parents ran off with the money.
Yeah.
And then he had an early death, same year as Dana's son, Tyler.
Oof.
2010.
Yeah. Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just... It's really sad. And when Gary Coleman was on Howard Stern later in the year, 1999... He confronted Howard about a couple things.
Who did?
But not
Gary
really.
Gary Coleman.
He didn't shit.
He came out strong, but like hard, and then he just fizzled out, and he's like, you know, maybe I don't really have much of a case here to be mad at Howard.
Yeah, but he at least he had the guts to bring it up. I mean, he didn't exactly. Baba Booey came in.
Yeah.
Baba Bad News, as they call him.
Yeah.
He came in to stir the pot, saying like, no, I heard that... Gary is mad at us because he thinks we're responsible for Dana's death. So then Howard explains, like, rambling, no, she was so happy when she left. I don't understand what happened.
Yeah, okay.
And so then Gary Coleman's like, oh, okay, I misheard then.
Yeah. Yeah, Gary Coleman seems like a nice guy, but he's just like, he's had enough of everything.
He seemed like a really nice guy.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just, he was an easy target, too.
I guess the last scene of that... that Fox movie, the TV movie about Dana's life, it was Todd and Gary were just at the grave of Dana Plato's real grave, and like that was like the last scene.
Wow.
Of that movie. Like it's a harsh thing, and like, and now, you know, Family Guy.
Yeah. Shoving buddies. Yeah.
The New Girl, I'm next.
Yeah.
What?
And Gary Coleman played himself too.
Yeah, in the last scene, yeah.
Jesus.
But yeah, that RV that she died in sold for $55,000, so I would put it on auction.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Who would want that?
I don't know.
Hey, guys, this is the RV where Dana Plato died.
Actress Dana Plato died, yeah.
I think that she, you know, just could never find her footing with what she truly wanted to do.
I think this added into that. You know, the legend of these troubled, you know, 80s sitcom stars, kid stars. They were like the poster children for shit going wrong like that. You know, like Todd Bridges especially and all that stuff. And they were like Corey Haim, them. I think I'm covering the most on-the-nose death and entertainment things of like child stars gone wrong. And you started it with Bobby Driscoll, the first one.
Yeah.
Where, you know, the industry just chews these people up and spits them out, but they're real human beings that start acting so young. It's a really messed up thing.
Like, yeah.
Anyone getting their kid into acting these days should be tried at The Hague.
Yeah.
You know, criminal court. Because it's like, it's real. You know, the odds are against them. Everything is messed up. We've talked about that Cronenberg movie before, Map of the Stars, and like, yeah.
Yeah, it's just, you're taking developing minds in and shaping it puts them into a midlife crisis by the time they're like 13 years old.
Yeah.
Like
they're washed up at 19.
Yeah, like it messes with your perception of who you are.
Corey Haim was washed up at 19 too.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I'm kind of done in this industry. What? Your life is just starting, dude.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what Henry Thomas said, the kid from E.T., that a little bit later on after that movie, he would go into auditions and the producers would look at him and he knew immediately that, oh, they're expecting the cute kid from E.T.
Yeah.
And I'm not that anymore.
It's so weird. It's so weird. Because they just see you as one thing.
Yeah.
And now it's just like every actor's doing every fucking weird thing and changing genres. And
yeah,
it's great.
Right, yeah.
If, and if only more, producers knew that earlier on.
There's more awareness, too, of the weird shit that was going on.
Yeah, but yeah, exactly.
At this time, once you're acting in that realm of just sitcom star, you're not leaving that at all.
There were some blind items that she was taking advantage by producers back in the day.
I believe it, yeah.
And that is probably very likely.
And I think with her, you know, it's things subconsciously that, you know, work through her psyche and manifested itself in drug abuse and all these other things. But she never came to terms with anything. She never had time to, because she died at 34 and she just never, you know, fully, you know, digested exactly everything that happened to her.
Yeah.
No. And she really wasn't equipped to deal with her persona that she was supposed to be at that time. Like when she would go on Howard Stern, it wasn't a healthy environment for her.
No. And I think a lot of these people did that, you know, they become like Stern whack pack people and they just, you know, they were kind of like, okay with that. And it's like, yeah, Stern invites people into that, you know, sphere, but it's only to benefit him. I think Artie Lang found that out kind of the hard way.
Oh, big time. That was the weirdest thing when after Artie Lang like stabbed himself and people were calling in and they're like, how's he doing? He's like, I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
He's like, we don't have that type of relationship.
Well, that's what Norm McDonald says. He's like, yeah, you know, he's what? Like, he's treating him like Hank the Angry Dwarf there.
Yeah.
You know? And like he said that earnestly. And then he came on back on Stern. He's like, and Stern's like, why'd you say that about me?
Because you are.
Artie's like, he's like, oh, did I say that?
Yeah. So he was like Gary Coleman backing down.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Once you're in the actual face-to-face.
The orbit.
The orbit, yeah.
Yeah, well, Howard Stern would always say about Artie, hey, he shows up for work and he's funny.
Yeah.
I believe it when he tells me he's not on drugs. What do I know?
That is, he said that about her too. Like, I don't know when anyone's on drugs. I'm like this guy, like Scott Weiland, you know, got arrested 2 days after he came on the show and said he was clean and sober. What do I know? But he plays dumb, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, big time, yeah.
In some ways, it's true. I mean, how are we to know every time somebody's on drugs? But at the same time, Artie is a very specific example where it was years and years of obvious admitted drug use.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, he was very upfront about it.
So can you blame Howard entirely for these things?
No.
No, but did he play a small part in some of this catastrophe?
Medium part.
Yeah. Yes.
Bigger than small.
Yeah, very sad story. But yeah, she will be missed. And I think she was just a real genuine person and gone too soon.
Gone too
soon. As I say.
Yes. R.I.P.
R.I.P. Any housekeeping things we want to bring up? We already, at the top, I forced the issue with the YouTube thing.
Yeah, just go check us out on patreon.com/deathandentertainment. We're going to have different levels of membership, but we will be releasing, you know, different videos that are being banned from YouTube.
Too hot for YouTube.
Yeah. We're going to have, you know, some different things too. I have a series that I'm going to finish very soon called Death of a Career. And the first episode is about Brett Favre, and we're going to debut it on the Patreon, okay?
Let's go.
And the band Bridge YouTube episode will be on the Patreon.
Exactly.
It's going to have to be now.
Yep. So if you want to support the show and throw us a few shekels to get some extra content, go ahead.
Please, please, please. We need it.
And follow us on TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, all the good things.
All the good stuff.
Send us a death threat, deathandentertainment@gmail.com.
Yeah. As usual.
And I think that's it.
And we thank you.
Yeah.
And we love you.
And until next time.
Don't go dying on us. Sorry about that, kids.
You have just heard
a true Hollywood murder mystery.
I have never seen anything like this before.
The movies, Broadway, music, television, all of it.
A place that manufactures
nightmares.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
Good night. Please drive home carefully and come back again soon.